time now for the nightcap.
Who are you talking to right now? Do you know how much I make a year? I mean, even if I told you, you wouldn't believe it. Do you know what would happen if I suddenly decided to stop going into work? A business big enough that it could be listed on the NASDAQ goes belly up. Disappears. It ceases to exist without me. No, you clearly don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No, I am the one who knocks.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Hour number two of the nightcap. Welcome in, Joe DiBiase and Kyle Powell here on WGR. Sabres are on a four-game losing streak. UB lost in the MAC championship in heartbreaking fashion. The Bills lost to the Dolphins. And yet, everyone seems pretty happy, including myself. Everyone seems pretty happy. Things are fun around here. Josh Allen looks good. Rasmus Dahlin looks good. Jack Eichel looks good. UB looks good, even though they didn't win the MAC championship. So, we're still here, and we're still optimistic. We're talking Sabres. We'll hear from Sean Tierney in about 25 minutes. He was on the morning show today. Good analytical stuff. He's at Charting Hockey on Twitter. And what do the Sabres still need to do here? Like, what's next? Because they're not perfect. We see it. Because perfect, Toronto's not perfect either, but you're below them. Tampa might be as perfect as it gets. They need some more on defense, and they need more depth scoring. Now, one of those things might be here. Lawrence Pilot is smooth as can be. That little move he makes, I loved it so much. It's a move I did younger when I was younger playing hockey. In his own end, guy coming in, pressuring him from the middle. And he knows if he doesn't take the puck from me, he's going to fly by. And he puts the puck between his legs and spins at the same time. And there he is all day now because of that little move. Super smooth. And I feel like even other defensemen that are consistently in the lineup, Zach Bogosian, Nathan Beaulieu come to mind for this. They are defensemen to me that would panic in a situation like that and turn it over a lot of times in that spot. And Pilot just seems so calm, cool, and collected out there. He doesn't seem to feel pressure. And if I have one bone to pick with this team right now, it is that one pairing of Nathan Beaulieu and Zach Bogosian. I feel like they're consistently doing the wrong thing where they are in the ice. Awareness of where the puck is, awareness of where your man is. Like, that's something I never seem to have to question with a guy like Dahlin and Pilot. And maybe that's my bias kicking in. Maybe that's, hey, we're not looking for things that are bad with Dahlin, so maybe we don't see them as much. But the things that Bogosian and Beaulieu continue to struggle with are highlighted by that Matthews goal last night, who jumps to take the puck right off of Nathan Beaulieu's head, essentially, and he has no idea where the puck is. And then he wraps it around, and, like, I don't know what Bogosian's doing. Get to the puck. He is coming around behind the net. You are already at the spot he is going to, and he still beats you to the side. So I just feel like those two, as a pairing, can't continue. I feel like they're slower to process things. I feel like they're more ready to feel pressure than some of their other defensemen. And I think Bogosian has been better than he has been in the past, but he still struggles with things like that. And I don't know. I'd like to see. I think you got to split those two up. I don't think that can be a pairing anymore. It got them in trouble last night. Part of that, I know, was Casey Nelson being hurt. But if you can, avoid that Beaulieu-Bogosian pairing. But like I said, it's one of the few things I'm really not happy with this team right now. The things I've been unhappy with in the past, speed is number one on that list. They are so much better at it.
Every aspect.
Yeah, they're so much more aggressive on the forecheck, and they're able to be aggressive on the forecheck because their guys can skate. Connor Sherry is like a little Energizer bunny out there on the forecheck. Skinner is super tight on his edges, and that makes him a very good forechecker. This is like I think back to Matt Molson forechecking, where it's like the defenseman makes one simple move and he blows by him. Like now you got to really work to get by that first guy here, and I think that makes things easier on your defenseman too. So I think speed, just in general, it just makes everything look easier, and I think the Sabres are proving that this year. They went out, they got faster at forward and on the blue line, and they're not perfect in that area, but wow, they are so much better in that aspect of the game. 803-0550, your observations from Sabres-Leafs last night, and our Twitter poll. Would you rather play the Leafs in the first round of the playoffs, or the team I'm using as an example for the other one, the Blue Jackets? A team that might be an easier matchup, but yeah, we don't really care about them as much. It wouldn't be as exciting. But then again, like I said, you'd be more likely to win. 803-0550 is the number. Let's go to Greg. Greg, you're on the nightcap. What's up?
Hey, guys. Thanks for the call.
Sure.
Had an observation last night, and maybe this has been the way throughout the season. I was just, you know, being a little more nitpicky last night. But I was noticing watching the game, Jeff Skinner wasn't in overtime until, what, the third line?
Yep.
I just was kind of confused by that, having the leading scorer, you know, on the third line. I mean, put him on the first or second line, get him in there at least twice during overtime. So,
yeah.
I don't know, I was a little confused by that, and I like how Housley coached most of the game. That was the only part where I was really confused about it. And then, you know, the next part, like, if we go into shootouts, I'm not really feeling warm and fuzzy anyways going into shootout against the Toronto team with a lot of firepower, given our struggles to get goals in on a shootout.
This year they've been pretty good at it.
Yeah.
3-0, maybe? Are they 3-0 in it?
Yeah, I think more what I'm thinking of is Detroit, you know, taking nine, you know, rounds to finally get, you know, a goal. And I think there was a game where it took us five or six, and I don't think we can do that with a team like Toronto. That's more where my...
Yeah, okay. Yeah, fair enough. I think that's a good point. And I agree with you on the Skinner thing. I'm not quite sure why they pick Reinhart over him on that first pairing. Look, Reinhart's very good, but his skill set, to me, doesn't fit well with the 3-on-3 overtime. The best players for 3-on-3 overtime are guys that can carry the puck themselves, that are fast in their own right, that are super good skaters. And Reinhart does some things very well, like be in front of the net, passing. But you saw it last night. There's about a 30 to 40 second stretch, it felt like, where Reinhart is just stick handling the puck in his own end because he doesn't want to carry it up himself. He's not a guy that's got the speed and the ability to carry a puck in and create a rush on his own. Skinner is, not to the same level that maybe Eichel and Dahlin are, but he's fast. He's a very good skater. He's got good hands. I agree with you. I would like to see Skinner paired with Eichel when they go to 3-on-3 overtime. They've had Skinner with Sobotka, and to me what happens when you do that is, well, I don't really want Sobotka on the ice, so I guess now I'm not playing Skinner very much when I go to 3-on-3. I will say this, though. They had been doing a lot of Reinhart Eichel. They did switch it up last night, if I have this right. I think they did Sherry to start 3-on-3 overtime with Eichel.
Yes.
Okay, so maybe when Sherry was hurt, that's why they did it with Reinhart. But...
Yeah, I like that,
because Sherry is not also, he's neither a guy that I think is very good at carrying the puck in, but he's at least, like I kind of mentioned a minute ago, forechecking, getting in there to force turnovers, chip and chase if he has to. Like, he's a better fit even for 3-on-3 than I think Reinhart is.
Yeah,
but they've done a lot of Reinhart, Eichel.
The two most frequent OT starting lineups for the Sabres during that stretch seemed like they were going every game. Was Eichel? It was a combination of Eichel, Sherry, or Dahlin, or Eichel, Sherry, Ristolainen.
Yeah, Dahlin too. Dahlin's always got to be out there. He's so good in that 3-on-3. He's so good at finding open space, and I think he's perfect for it. I do. I'm watching this. I really hope Brendan Gooley turns into something. I'm watching the Amerks right now. They're on TV. They're up 2-0 against Utica. I think Matt Tennyson just scored. It was a pretty nice pass by Alex Nylander, and I'm watching Gooley, man. He is blazing fast. I know he's having a rough year down there. I really hope he becomes something because we're talking about 3-on-3 now. He's perfect for that. He's perfect. If he were to come up right now, I think he beat everyone not named Jack Eichel in a race. He is so fast. So hopefully he becomes something, because I think they could use a little bit more depth on the blue line. I think they could use maybe not having to play Casey Nelson as much, Beaulieu at some point. But we're nitpicking at this point. We're nitpicking. There's a lot going right with this team. And even though I've kind of criticized them a little bit for the 3-on-3 play, I mean, they have lost two overtimes in the past few games. They've done pretty well at it this year. They understand that Eichel's the one that needs to carry the puck. They don't play Opozo in overtime. I think that's very smart, and I'm glad they do that. They realize skating is the number one asset for that type of play, so they don't put Opozo out there. They really don't put Bogosian out there, except they did yesterday. Maybe that was just because they got late in it. That's another thing that I think they should continue to do. Like, I think Housley's done a pretty good job at coaching that. So there's not much they need to fix. But like I said, the two things, if they do need to fix something, would be they need to get some sort of second line rolling. And I think they could use another top four defenseman. But if Pilot keeps playing like this, I mean, he's already in the top pair. Then maybe you don't. Brandon Montour's name was tossed out there in trade rumors for the Ducks. If Pilot continues to play like this, I don't need that type of player. I don't need a Brandon Montour. Because he is smooth. And he's playing 23 minutes last night. Like, he's good. I think he's good. From what I've seen in just a couple of games and the little I saw from him in Rochester, I think I'd be surprised at this point if he ever plays for the Amherst again. He looks really good, Pilot.
You don't mind not having an extra right-handed shot?
No.
Because that is Montour in a situation like last night, yeah, with Nelson only playing 2 minutes. You're rocking Bogosian.
I know. I think you are short-handed on the right-hand side, but remember, Dahlin naturally played his offside. He hasn't been doing it.
Correct.
And he's been doing very well on the left. It's not like he can't do either. Like, he can do both.
No, Ristolainen. We forget Ristolainen.
You have Ristolainen, Bogosian, and then
in an instance where you're lacking in Nelson if he's hurt. Right.
Yeah. That's like it, though, they have for right-handed. Yeah. Even Gouley's a left-handed
in the
shot.
System, yeah.
Right. Remember, Dahlin, though, like, you treat him as both, because he naturally played his offside, and obviously you've seen the past week or so, he is just as good on both sides. 803-0550 is the number. We'll take a timeout here. We'll hear from Sean Tierney, who was on with the morning show next. Joe DiBiase and Kyle Powell. We're going to do a little baseball talk later, too. There's a big trade that happened. Is it fair to call it a big trade?
Oh, yeah.
It's fair. What about massive? Blockbuster. Can I call it a blockbuster trade?
Division shifting.
I think you need two stars for it to be a blockbuster.
It's division shifting. We'll go with that.
Division shifting.
It reshapes the NL Central.
All right. Sean Tierney, though, next on the Nightcap on WGR.
The best way to sum them up right now is that it's finally gotten better. And I think anyone who's followed the NHL the past few seasons, the Sabres have almost been, not a punchline, but something like that sort of very bottom of the list team for the past couple of seasons, where basically nothing has been going right, and they've been at the bottom of basically every chart I've tweeted out over the past maybe 3 years.
There's Sean Tierney. We're going to hear more from him in just a second. Nothing's gone right in the last 5 years. One thing went right. They won the tank. Holy cow, what a difference 3 points would have made if they would end up with Dylan Strome instead of Jack Eichel. We would not be sitting here today with the same optimism. So one thing went right in that it also went bad, but that's the NHL. That's the way it's set up. It's not a shocker that the two teams that were worst in the NHL in consecutive years just a couple years ago played one of the most exciting games of the NHL season on national television last night with superstar players. It's not a coincidence. It's not a coincidence. I don't know how you feel about this, Kyle, but I read a article kind of defending the job Ron Hextall did in Philly, and it was essentially saying that Flyer fans can take pride in the fact that they always were trying to win, that they never bottomed out. And one example they used was Pittsburgh in there. And part of me just went, wait, that's the example
that's the
you're
reason
using? I'm like,
that we look up to them every single season.
They have three cups. One, because they tanked in the 80s to get Mario Lemieux, and then I don't think they tanked to do this on purpose, but they ended up worse than the league and bottomed out and ended up with Malkin, Crosby, Fleury. So, yeah, trying to win every year is all well and good, but you don't get Austin Matthews and Jack Eichel that way. The Phillies, they're not the perfect example for that because they've had great players. But like that line of thinking is just so old school and just not right. It's not right. There are different ways to win, but one of them is absolutely picking at the top of the draft year after year. And the Sabres are now proof of that. They are. There were those anomalies. Like, oh, well, look at Edmonton. They're not very good. And they kind of are still because their GM's a clown. But I'm sure people out there, if anyone in the NHL world was arguing about whether the team should tank the past couple years, I am sure the Sabres would have been an example of, well, it doesn't always work. Look at the Sabres. They're still last. But now look, they got another top player, and suddenly they are third in the Eastern Conference and have been first in the NHL at times this year. Let's now hear from Sean Tierney, more of an in-depth look at the Sabres, at Charting Hockey on Twitter. He was on with the morning show today. Here is Sean with the guys.
Sean Tierney, Charting Hockey on Twitter, at Charting Hockey. Sean, good morning.
Morning, how you doing?
How do you like the Seattle name? What do you lean toward one? Just don't say Kraken. Are you leaning toward one name?
I don't know. For me, I think Sockeyes is not the way that I would lean, but I know that seems to be the fan sentiment right now. I might be a Totems person. I saw the jersey floating around with sort of the throwback to the old Totems look, and that seems pretty sharp to me, but I don't know. Sockeyes doesn't really do it for me.
Yeah. All right. Well, glad to have you on the show. Sean Tierney, he is at Charting Hockey, writes for TSN Analytics, for The Athletic. Did you get a chance to see last night's game between the Sabres and the Leafs?
I was watching it really closely, yeah.
Any thoughts coming out of it?
Well, for me, it was sort of a strange game, I thought. It looked like Buffalo really came out hard, and through that first period, I thought, this looks like another one of those games where maybe the Leafs are the better team, but the Sabres are still going to wipe them out. And, you know, sort of Rasmus Ristolainen's coming in from the point and sort of dangling through everybody a few times. It kind of looked like maybe it was going to be Buffalo's night. Then as the second period, somewhere maybe about halfway through, it seemed like the switch just sort of flipped on for the Leafs, and they sort of took the game over. And there was that bit of a bounce back in the third period where it went either way before the overtime. And then, I don't know, by the time we got into the overtime, it's sort of anybody's guess. I just thought for the Sabres, from my point of view, it looked like they kind of had the game in hand at first, and then they let it slip away by not bearing a couple more of their chances while they had the opportunity. The Leafs have been kind of a team that gives up a lot of quality against all season. It hasn't really been a strength despite their record. And the Sabres were kind of taking advantage of that for a little bit, but they lost steam somewhere along the line. And then there's no guarding against an Austin Matthews wrister like that in overtime. So, you know, you take the point and you live another day. But I just thought the Sabres maybe squandered a bit of a chance.
Yeah. And Freddie Anderson, I mean, he didn't have to make, I don't know, too many great saves, but it might be a testament to how good he is. I came away pretty impressed with him. He is as under control a goalie as I've seen in quite some time and has been really important for the Leafs this year, I think.
Yeah, and so one of my favorite graphs that I keep updated is one for goalies, their shot map, where you compare the goals they've given up to the expected goals that they've faced. Pekka Rinne has kind of been at the top of that list all season. He's about 16 goals better than what you would expect, which is pretty good this part of the season in. And then Frederik Andersen, after last night, is about 17 goals better than expectation. So he's not just good right now. He might be one of the top three goalies in the NHL right now, sort of maybe Rinne, maybe Andersen, and then, you know, kind of a flip up after that for who might be next in that group. So, like you said, Andersen kind of keeps it quiet. He doesn't flash the glove. Looks like he's under control. And the Leafs haven't really been playing tremendously in front of him. He's kind of bailed them out for the past couple of weeks. maybe Nylander gives him a push when he comes back. But, yeah, Anderson's kind of a night-in, night-out savior for that team.
Sean Tierney joining us on the Wester Hotline. I've got Sean on because, Sean, I reference your stuff on the show so often that I feel like I needed to bring you on. And, you know, if anyone wants to support you and the stuff you're doing, you mentioned, I sent you a message, that all we're doing is buying you cups of coffee for all the work that you end up doing with these charts. Tell us the story of the Buffalo Sabres so far this year. It's a team that has won, had a 10-game win streak. They're near the top of the standings. I think Sabre fans have reasonable expectations and evaluations of who they are. Would you say it's smoke and mirrors? Is it small overachievement? When you look at the Sabres and who they are and how they play, what do the numbers say? I was mentioning that analytics can be like a blood test. You know, what's in the numbers? What's in all of that for the Sabres and who they are this year?
So the best way to sum them up right now is that it's finally gotten better. And I think anyone who's followed the NHL the past few seasons, the Sabres have almost been not a punchline, but something like that sort of very bottom of the list team for the past couple of seasons where basically nothing has been going right. And they've been at the bottom of basically every chart I've tweeted out over the past maybe 3 years.
Right. They've been in your bad chart. They've been in your dull chart.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. I mean, sort of nothing going in the right direction. No goaltending, no luck on the shooting, no luck in the draft lottery. So, you know, nothing really going in the right way. This season, that's over. The Sabres have been kind of a break-even team in terms of expected goals for and against. So, you know, the kind of when you look at the shots, but you weight them by the quality or the danger of each of those shots, they give up about as much as they generate. That's way, way, way better than they've been for years. And you can live in the NHL playing that way if you're giving up about as much as you generate. You know, you're going to win your share of games a lot more than they have been. After the 10-game win streak or somewhere around in there, there were a bunch of overtimes and a bunch of, you know, sort of wins where they maybe escaped and they didn't deserve the fate they had. There's been a bit of a downtrend since maybe about the middle of November where they're giving up a lot more quality than they're generating. That's a new trend. It's not how they had been playing the first maybe 6 weeks of the season. So that kind of troubles me a little bit looking at the Sabres. Their trend is like a straight line down right now where they are really giving up a ton against. They're not generating much for. And, you know, that's a really hard way to win hockey games in the NHL if you keep it up that way. The one other thing I would say about them so far that has caught me every time I check through my things in the morning, they're playing a really dull style. And I don't know if that's something that comes across just sort of visually watching them. They have exciting players. They're scoring some goals. But if you compare their pace of play, the number of shots they take and allow in a game right now, they're basically the slowest moving or one of the bottom three teams in the league. They don't give up very much either, but they certainly don't generate many chances for themselves. And so they're playing a really, really slow style. In the past, teams that have had success with this are low-skilled teams. If you limit the number of chances in a game, it kind of increases the impact of luck. You never know what's going to happen. This can be a way that a bad team can win more games than they should. If you're a good team, if you have skill, you try to go fast because the more shots you get, the more you expect your advantage to play out. So I'm not sure what to make of it. If that's a real decision that Housley is really, you know, sort of stuck to, that they want to play something more slow and plodding. But they're one of the slowest teams in the league right now, and the trend the past 2 weeks is definitely down in terms of their quality management.
Sean Tierney, he is at Charting Hockey on Twitter. So for the style, you're saying, it sounds like they are a very conservative team, which, you know, to me, that's an important thing to point out. I think they have faster skaters. They have more ability to be fast. They look much different. Like in the first part of what we talked about, they're a much different team. But Phil Housley still is seemingly playing a conservative style, perhaps because of the age of some of his players. You know, you've got Rasmus Dahlin out here as an 18-year-old logging a lot of minutes. Casey Mittelstadt is one of your top three-line centers, maybe your second-line center. So that could be something that explains it. Well, Sean, when you look at individual players on this team, let's start with Rasmus Dahlin as an 18-year-old getting the minutes he's getting. What are you seeing from him?
Basically, everything that I look at for him really checks out right now. And that's really outstanding for an 18-year-old defenseman to come in fresh like that, find his legs right away, and, you know, become a competent member of the top four. The Sabres, again, every player you look at in terms of their shot rates, they fall somewhere between dull with a handful of skaters like Tage Thompson, maybe Sobotka, guys who are plotting in the bad quadrant where they are on ice for, you know, more shots against than they generate. Dahlin has been one of the few, maybe the handful, that have managed to hang around the good quadrant where they're generating more than they give up when they're on the ice. It's a small group for the Sabres. Maybe Dahlin, Skinner, Sheary had been there for a while. Jack Eichel was hanging out there for a while. So he's not just one of the players that's sort of hanging around. He's been a leader for the team so far. He's definitely handling the minutes. And last night I was tweeting out some highlights, some gifs as the game went on. And he just, you know, from the eye test as well, you can see that he's found himself on the ice. He's comfortable lugging the puck around. He really makes people miss because I think his speed is really deceptive. And so he kind of comes up on you quickly and he turns people around as he's bringing the puck up. So, you know, the advanced numbers look good. He's generating chances. He's driving the play. He's not really scoring right now, but I'm not sure if that's something anybody was expecting him to do this early in his career. I really like Pilot last night, too, or Pilot, the young defenseman they've called up there, too. He looked like he had his head on straight and was making good passes, too. His shot rates didn't really reflect the way he seemed to be driving play, but I think that's a player who probably deserves a good look as the season wears on as well.
Sean Tierney at Charting Hockey. One more thing before I let you go. How about Eichel and Skinner as a pair and as individuals? You know, I think Skinner has scored at a rate that most would say he can't keep up, but could it be somewhat sustainable? You know, could a player's shooting percentage over his career go up if he changes venues and all of a sudden goes from playing with Carolina to playing with Jack Eichel at center for the next 5-7 years? You know, as the Sabres decide whether or not they want to re-sign Jeff Skinner, they probably don't think he'll shoot at 23%, but could they expect that his career shooting percentage does go up playing with a center like Eichel?
Sure. For me, Jeff Skinner is somebody that you try to lock down if you're trying to build a team up. His expected goals, the number of chances he generates and the quality, that's always been there, even when he was in Carolina. He's always been fantastic at getting right to the front of the net, converting his chances at a high rate, and he's brought that same sort of thing to Buffalo. So if you're looking under the hood at the stats that support the work that he's doing, he's not that different than he's been in past years. He's always been a player who shoots from maybe about average distance for a forward, but he does his damage right in front of the net. So if you look at his shot map, everything that he's got is really right in that high slot, net front area, and that's the way he's always played the game. He's generating expected goals at a consistent rate, game in, game out. His trend is actually a little bit up right now, which is pretty wild to say considering how he's played. Gets lots of shots on net. He can use every kind of shot to score. For me, Jeff Skinner, if you're wondering, is this the kind of player who can keep this rate up? He's not going to shoot, you know, over 20% for his career. That's not a sustainable percentage for basically anybody aside from Patrick Laine. But this is a guy who really can score. And match with Jack Eichel going forward, this is going to be a dangerous tandem. So for me, it's a no-brainer. Jeff Skinner, if he wants to stay, you get him a contract because he's always been a great scorer. And I think Sabres fans are seeing that he can bring it game in and game out for the team.
With Eichel, have you seen anything in his numbers change from the first 3 years to this year? The coach is praising his 200-foot game. His goal scoring is down. His assists are way up, and the team is winning. And he's wearing the C. So like things feel different. Is he any different?
Sorry to cut you off. So Eichel's funny. He is one of the furthest out shooters that you'll get from a forward in the NHL. His average shot distance is something like 37, 38 feet out, and the average for a forward is about 28 feet. He's just a long bomber. And so the thing that can happen sometimes, even when you're an elite shooter like him, you can go through sort of waves where your goals are coming and your goals aren't coming if you're shooting from that far out. There's just so much in between you and the net when you're doing that. Last night he scored a couple. He's got about 11 expected goals on the season, gets him up to 7, so he's not so far up from his expectation right now. For me, Jack Eichel, the fact that he's added the assist should be really, really exciting for everyone because the goal-scoring thing is going to happen for him. He's a purposeful long-distance shooter. He can shoot from that distance and convert. He's going to have his waves in and out if he continues to kind of shoot from that distance going forward. But, you know, maybe as he gets stronger, as he sees the power of getting in closer on net too, he'll convert a little bit more often. For me, after the couple of goals last night, that kind of evened things out a little bit. He moves back closer to his expectation. I really expect to see him get into that 25-goal range by the end of the season. The way he's piling up assists, you know, he's going to have a great point total too. he's a lock, and I think he's becoming one of those underappreciated stars in the NHL who really is a legitimate one or number one center for a team.
Sean Tierney on Twitter at Charting Hockey. Thanks, Sean. We'll do it again maybe a little later in the season.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on.
There he is, Sean Tierney with The Morning Show with Jeremy White, and they talked a little bit about point totals at the end there. Skinner is at 29 points in 29 games, 82-point pace. Jack Eichel, 34 points in 29 games. I'm sure that's hovering around 90. Whew, it's pretty good. The one thing I wanted to see, talked about it a lot in the offseason, was can Eichel give me that season that Nathan MacKinnon gave Colorado last year? He went from a 56-point player to a 98-point player. Huge explosion. And Eichel's exploding, but it's not in the typical way. I mean, he scored two last night, but seven on the year. He's fourth on the team in goals, but he is first in points. I mean, assist-wise, he is lighting the lamp. If you can light the lamp with assists, he's doing it. 27 assists in 29 games. I mean, he's almost on pace for 80 assists. That's crazy. There are very few players in the league, though, that do that consistently. Put up those few amount of goals and a giant amount of assists. Joe Thornton's one.
Blake Wheeler.
Blake Wheeler's one. Jacob Voracek in Philly is one.
34 assists this year for Wheeler. Last time I checked,
goals?
Four goals.
Whew! That's right, because last year, I think there was a point where he maybe had two goals and like 25 assists. So yeah, he's become one of the best playmakers in the league. Eichel's shot is too good, though, to be that. But this is a good sign. Like, when he's not scoring, if he's still giving you those type of like assist numbers, like all those names we just mentioned are all-star hockey players. His shot is great, and we saw it last night. If he can get that going, plus he keeps the assists going, him and Skinner, man, they could be a duo, one of the top duos in the league for years to come. I hope they keep it together. 803-0550 is the number. We'll talk a little baseball on the other side, as well as some Seattle hockey team names. Last call in the nightcap, 803-0550 is the number. Jody Biasi and Kyle Powell on WGR.
Now 81 RBIs, and he swings. It's a high drive, deep right field, back of the warranty track, back of the wall, and touch them all, Goldie. He's heating up, folks. It's 1-0 Diamondbacks.
All right, Kyle. What happened in baseball today, and why should I care about it? You wouldn't call it a blockbuster earlier.
You wouldn't call it a blockbuster earlier.
Well, I didn't know what to call it. I don't know how big it is. I knew who the guy is. So to me, that means it must be a pretty major trade.
Paul Goldschmidt?
Yeah, I've heard of him.
America's first baseman, as they call him?
Sure. So Therefore, it must be a big trade.
Yes, it was a large trade. Three players and a compensatory B draft pick?
What does that mean?
I'd have to look it up.
Is it B draft like a supplemental draft, or they draft like bumblebees?
No, it involves whether or not something along the lines of whether Goldschmidt, if he does sign with St. Louis following this season, it would be, I believe, something along the lines of either a first or second round draft pick, and they received a B. So my guess, my hunch, would be late first or second round draft pick from St. Louis as well. But yes. Lifelong Diamondback got moved today. Luke Weaver, who was a middling young pitcher, 25 years old still has some time to get his potential back, struggled this season for St. Louis, is heading to Arizona for a fresh start. Prospect Carson Kelly, who was widely ranked third in the Cardinals prospect system as of last year. And Andy Young, who I had to do some digging for. He's not a big prospect, 37th round, but in his most recent stats.
What round?
37th.
What?
2016.
How?
There's a lot of rounds.
Like anyone out there, I don't know much about baseball. How many rounds are there?
There's a lot of rounds.
What's a lot? Do you even know?
Well.
Does it ever end? Is the draft still going?
To put it in context, Mike Piazza, inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2016, was drafted in the 62nd round.
So how many rounds are there?
I don't know.
You don't know how many rounds there are? You are Mr. Baseball.
I always just knew that Piazza was very late, so there's at least 62. I never bothered to care what was after that.
How many
rounds?
Because
it was a favor from Tommy Lasorda. It was a family favor. Draft Mike Piazza, please. Rookie of the year, 400 homers later, Hall of Fame.
Google's telling me there are 40 rounds, but of course that can that could be now. Fluctuate. It would have been. Like the NHL used to have like 10 or something.
But back to Andy Young. 301 in the Arizona Fall League this fall. So it's not a bad haul for Arizona. They're going to go into a bit of a rebuild mode. They've got some contracts for guys in the back ends of 30. Paul Goldschmidt was and is one of my favorite out-of-market players to watch.
Okay. Does this mean the Cardinals are going to be good now?
At least for this year, because he is another one of those rentals that just got moved before the deadline.
See, to me, if I were going to make a list of sports teams that I would least like to watch on TV, the Cardinals would be up there.
The Cardinals, yes, for a very long
time.
A
lot of baseball teams were, for me, but they'd be top of the list.
They had a very boring style of play. This year, after relieving their manager of his duties, they kind of got with the times a little bit. They used to be that, Mr. Fundamental, back to the 80s, like Whitey Herzog and bunts and steals. And ever since then, it's been, we're going to catch the ball. We're not going to strike out. We're going to do our thing the Cardinal way, as they called it. But towards the end of last season, they got themselves back in the wild card hunt, and it's because they kind of adopted some newer age methods of play.
Gotcha. All right. Other things that we want to get to before we get out of here. Of course, we've got UB basketball was on tonight. If you didn't know, they were tied at halftime against Division II Lemoyne, but they handled business. They outscored them 52-18 in the second half. So they won 89-55. UB, who is ranked 17th in the country, by the way, which is awesome, are now continue to be undefeated at 8-0. They play Syracuse and Marquette this month. I bet you if they go undefeated through those two games, I bet you they're top 10 in the country, which would be crazy. But, I mean, right?
Yeah.
What would that be, 14-0 at that point? They got to play Bonaventure on Saturday, so that's going to be tough in its own right. Bonaventure won like 80-20 today, too. But if they could go undefeated, and that might be a tall task. I'm not a huge college basketball guy, so maybe I don't know how tall a task that is. But if they could go undefeated through Syracuse and Marquette, I bet you they're top 10, which would be awesome. Other thing I want to get to before we get out of here. Seattle NHL team names. There are odds out. Quickly, tell me what you think of these. Here's the favorites. Seattle Totems? Totems.
Totems.
Seattle Totems. That's the favorite. I don't like it. 5 out of 10. Seattle Emeralds is next. What is an emerald? Is it like a nut? I think it's also a nut. No, that's the brand. There's a brand.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm an idiot.
It's okay.
Rainers. Rainiers? I don't even... What are these team names? This isn't even a word.
Well, the Emerald is because they
or
are the Emerald
stupid.
City.
Well, right. I know that.
Okay.
Sockeyes. That's one of my favorites. The two team names that are at plus 700 are my two favorites. Sockeyes and Kraken. Seattle Kraken. Seattle Renegades.
Big fan of that one.
Yeah. Plus 1600.
You know that.
I like that one too. Sea Lions. Seals. Evergreens. The Whales. You can't be the Whales. We had the Whalers. It's too close. Can't do it. Cougars, Eagles, and Firebirds. Ooh, Firebirds. Can't do Eagles. It's too generic, and that doesn't make sense. Are there Eagles in Seattle?
You're asking the wrong guy.
I don't know. I've never been there. Firebirds would be cool. I vote Kraken. I'll put Kraken number one, Sockeyes number two, Firebirds three. Can't do Sea Lions. It's too close to Golden Seals. I like Renegades. Renegades 4. If I got to do a fifth one, I guess I do Totems. Cougars. What is Cougars? Can't do Cougars.
There's no Cougars in Seattle.
Right. Right. Well, are we the experts? We're probably the least qualified people to say if there are Cougars in Seattle or not. Some cool team names. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I'll be back on tomorrow because we have Thursday Night Football at 8. So I'll be on before that. Full show on Friday as well. Thanks, everybody, for calling, tuning in, and listening on demand. If you're listening on demand right now, maybe I'm in the future. 803, almost gave the phone number there. It's the Nightcap. Jody Biasi, Kyle Powell. Thanks, everybody, for listening. WGR.